Radio es periodismo, derechos, igualdad, dignidad, mujeres, inclusión, masculinidad, arte, expresión, libertad, esperanza, cultura, ecumenismo, literatura, historia y análisis. Pero en realidad somos una gran familia. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Encuentro Radio. Comunícate con nosotros a través de nuestro WhatsApp 302-521-2342. Aquí comienza un programa de Encuentro Radio.
From Colombia,
the Philippines,
the United States,
Germany,
Kenya,
Austria,
we are bringing our voices together to reflect on gender and social justice.
A multicultural look in the mirror at our society.
Welcome to Mirror Voices.
Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Colombian time.
Brought to you by CEPALC and Encuentro Radio.
Good afternoon or good morning, good evening, depending on what time you are joining us. Welcome to Mirrored Voices here on Encuentro Radio. My name is Hannah and I'm here today with Mariana. Hello, how are you?
Hi, Hannah. I'm good. And you, how are you?
Good. We're kind of lonely here in the studio today.
Yeah, that's true.
Michelle is, I think, currently on her way to Boyacá for some Sepulch workshops with Daniel and Alejandra. So we hope that everything goes great there and that Michelle comes back to tell us all about it. Maybe next week's program or hopefully soon. And in the meantime, we've also been working here on workshops in Bogota, which we'll be talking about today. And if you hear any noise in the background, there is work being done in Sepulch. So we've tried to close the doors and hopefully.
but it's not a
soundproof studio.
It's difficult to be quiet, everything.
Yeah, but we'll try our best. Today we are listening to music from Silvana Estrada, our artist of the day.
I love it.
She is a Mexican singer-songwriter, has a lot of really wonderful songs from Veracruz, Mexico. She cites her influences partly in American jazz, like Billie Holiday, as well as a lot of Latin American folk singers, like Chavela Vargas, Violeta Parra, Mercedes Sosa, and you can kind of hear it in her voice, some of that like folk music, Latin American style. She won the Latin Grammy Awards for Best New Artist in 2022. In 2024, this year, she was nominated for a song called Milagro y Desastre, which we can listen to later on. Also one of my personal favorites that make me cry every time I hear it, Si Me Matan, which we might listen to later on as well, about femicides in Mexico especially. Another beautiful, highly recommended song. So that's what we'll be listening to today in our breaks and kind of in the background as we're talking.
I guess in my case, the song that made me not cry but feel sad, it's Marchita.
Mm-hmm.
Because that song talking about a little bit that how a lot of women suffer violence in their house.
Which was also a song that was nominated in, I think, 2023 for different awards as well.
Okay.
And we found out she's coming to Bogota, but tickets run out very quickly.
So fast. Oh, my God.
So there might be some more tickets opening up to buy tomorrow. Who knows how long they'll be there, if we'll get a chance to.
I guess
get any or not.
Difficult trying to get a ticket.
Yeah. So this weekend here in Bogota, me and Mariana and Alejandra and Michelle and Amparo went to the Colombian Methodist Church here in Bogota, which if you listen to this program, you've heard me talk about because that's where I go. I'm part of the Methodist Church. And the women's ministry there is trying to do more activities this year.
Yeah.
And so that included inviting Sepulch to do a workshop on women in the Bible as women's rights perspective of looking at, you know, the empowered women in the Bible who fought for their rights or who symbol rights, and how those fights are still continuing into our own feminist movements today. So it's very interesting. We were competing with a little bit with a Colombian soccer game, which is always tough luck because in Colombia, soccer is the most important thing.
Yeah, and it's American Cup, so I guess it's so difficult that the people it's gonna trying to do something different.
Yeah.
Actually, there's people in the workshop telling like, I wanna go, I wanna see the play. So I guess it's difficult.
We didn't miss it entirely. You could have, ended during the first half, so like I was able to go watch the second half.
Yeah.
But we did hear at the end of our workshop people screaming for like 3 goals.
Yeah. I guess that was like difficult because in the first moment was 3 goals and you don't have the opportunity to saw it.
You're like, what is
and
happening in this
actually,
game that there's already 3?
I guess it was 4 goals, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
I remember hearing 3. I think by the time when we finished, I think there were 3.
Yeah, goals. But I'm not sure.
And I even remember a friend of mine in the U.S. texting me, was like, are you watching this Colombia game right now? And I was like, not yet, but I'm on my way.
No, yeah. We go back to here, to Sepulch, and later Alejandra and me go to. So the second part, obviously Alejandra is not the most a fan of football, but yeah, she accompanied me.
So yeah, there were maybe not as many people as the plan, but very thankful to people who did come, who made that sacrifice, or who just didn't care about soccer and were fine with coming. So because obviously we had planned this long before the American Cup had started. So who knew we were going to be competing for that time, that Saturday game. So the workshops, similar to what we often do with Sepulchs workshops, kind of splitting into four different mini workshops. So each group has a different leader, a different activity, a different focus, completely different from what the other groups are doing. And then at the end, we all kind of come together to present to the other groups what you did and what you learned. And then the comment that we always get is, oh, I wish I could have, like, got around to all of the different groups, and I wish we could have participated in more.
It's more common that the people said that.
I think every single time someone says that, like, oh, I would have wanted to participate in all of the groups. More excuses to invite us back.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Marianne, I don't know if you want to share a little bit about what your group worked on, and then I'll talk about mine.
Yeah, sure. Well, I have to talk about Susana, that it's a woman that appeared in Daniel's book. And I guess for my group was like a big surprise that story appeared, because it's talking about how the people not believe when a woman said that she was abused or victim of rape, because the people that was judging her was two old men that's supposed to be the judge in that town. So obviously it was so difficult. But appeared Daniel, like B, the person that represent Jesus, to talk and said that's not true. We need to ask the old men what tree be in the place that they saw that the woman be with other men. And the two old men asked something too different. So how was, like, the way that they understand that the old man was lying about?
Right, you have two different versions. And like, well, these don't really go together, so you're lying.
Exactly. So for my group, it was like a big surprise, because they realized that this continued to happen, because the person not believe in the woman when they say that they suffer violence in the house.
That could be today.
In any moment. And for the only man that I have in my group, he said, like, he never believed that, like, a story like that appear in the Bible, because obviously there are a lot of vision about the Bible, but you never listen about that. Like the man or the old man, like, be a mistake about that, and obviously listen that the old man wanna rape the woman. And later said that the woman, it's like the guilty because she be with other men that it's not her husband. So I guess was something good. Obviously, I have two girls in my group, and one of them started talking about, like, be a feminist and trying to support all women. And in a moment, I explained that in moments, your mental health, it's not good to help every woman, because it's not so good for you, or in my case, read every notice about a feminicide, and that's not tough. Good for my mental health, so I prefer, like, take away about that and trying to focus in other things, because it's like tired that every day appear a notice about a feminicide, not just in Colombia, around the world. So yeah, it was like, I guess for the girls, it was so important to learn more about how worse the justice here in Colombia when a woman said that she was raped, and something about La Casa de la Mujer, that it's a place that's supposed to help the woman, but if you call later that at 5 p.m., they're not going to answer because they have an office time. So you can call at 6 p.m. and tell my boyfriend or my husband it's trying to abuse me, but that's not going to work.
Only during business hours.
Yeah. They start 7 a.m. and finish 5 p.m. So obviously for a lot of people, they don't know about that how all the system work about the woman. We talk a little bit about Rosa Elvira Celi. That was one of the feminicide more known here in Colombia. We talk a little bit about Rafael Uribe Noguera, about the rapper of Juliana Zamboni, and the idea that a lot of people want to use the mental health to a way to get out to the jail. Because that happened, and there's a lot of notice when appear that the rape or the person that killed a woman be in the jail and said, I'm not good, I need a psychologist, this is not good for my mental health, and they can have the opportunity to go out. But right now they don't have that opportunity because Gustavo Petro take it away all the possibilities for the feminicide be like have like better option to trying to change the sentence that they have. Right now they can have it. That's something so good. And we have, well, in my case, I do something with music because that's the idea that give it for me. I use the music for the song Se Portaba Mal. And I change the lyrics. That's always the idea that here in Cepal, Amparo and Felix One, I do. That's something that I like so much, obviously, with more time. And
we can listen to a little bit of the song, the original, and then you can tell us how you changed the lyrics for this song. So we'll listen to a little bit of Se Portaba Mal.
Pegar tres puños antes de ir a cama y mañana perdóname que te quiero. Se portaba mal, muy mal. Tapaba la herida para ir al trabajo. Y si una mira pregunta, dice, por la escalera caí hasta abajo. Se hizo un libreto que se iba creyendo, mentiras que iba ofreciendo. Hoy solo me queda el lamento. Me dijo, todo esto quizás lo merezco. Seguro mañana despierto y el tipo me dice lo siento. Y se apagó como se apaga una vela encendida. Se sopla de golpe, se cierra la llama, se acaba la vida. Y así murió.
Well, I use like the same idea a little bit that they have in the original song. I put like different ideas in the song. I try to look how the woman that is suffered the violence is telling the friends that what's happened when she be with the judge and trying to explain the judge what happened. Later we have like the moment when the woman said that the man is gonna change, that maybe I deserve everything that has happened to me. The sad final is when I put that the man killed the woman, like every day kill a lot of women. The system called the friend and tell that the man call the friend and tell that it's dead woman. And the last moment it's trying to show that in any moment it's fault for the woman. I said that it's culpa del hombre, that it's like the way that they say in the song. I always try not be and say all the women be like that. That's not true. I guess that's something that we're trying to work, but
in the song that I use, I put that it's fault, the man, and it's not my fault to be a woman and suffer violence. And that man killed me. That was the first song. When we did the first song, I not believe that it's going to be so strong. I just start writing, and in a moment, the idea be in my head. And the other one, because I wore two songs, maybe you can try to look, is Maria, de Laura Mare. The normal song talk about, like, how the friends support when you finish your relationship. But I put, like, the way that all the women, we are going to support. But maybe we can listen a little bit of the original song, and we are back.
Hoy volví a salir sin hablar de ti, hoy volví a cantar una de Juan Luis y se me olvidó que estuviste aquí. Yo que pensé que me iba a morir, me fui a bailar, dejé el celular, fui con mis amigas de bar en bar. En abril dijiste que ibas a cambiar, pero yo cambié y no te quiero esperar. Ya me da igual si te veo o si te da por llamar. Ya me da igual si algún día me escribes, igual te voy a ignorar. Ya me da igual con quién andas o si deshablas de mí. Ya me da igual si quieres volver, hace tres canciones que me fui. Ya yo me fui, ya yo me fui.
So in this song, I trying to change like the idea of the first song, because in the first song I talk that the man killed the woman, but in this song I put the idea that the girl decide to leave that place with the man and said, I can't be here anymore. And one of their friends said, like, I'm happy to the same situation, what I'm gonna do. So, like, it's like two different versions in the same song. One of the friend is telling that I'm so tired, and other the friends tell, like, you can do it, I do it, I go 3 weeks ago. So the last part of the song said, I don't care if he wanna go back, I'm gonna go. That's not the idea, to go back to that same violence, the situation of that, because we trying to talk in my group, talk about the idea to support the woman when they said that they suffer violence or they abuse or they rape. So I guess was the idea that I trying to work, trying to look the two versions of the situation about the story for Susana. So obviously for a lot of people it's so difficult trying to believe to the woman, because in a lot of cases the woman is lying about that, and that's so sad, because they are like not care about the reality of a lot of women that is trying to say that she suffer abuse, but in some case that's not true, and the woman just wanna like have a good finish for her, not for the man. So I guess that situation, it's complete like more difficult for other women, that the reality is there saying no more. So I guess it's difficult because that's happening. But yeah, that was like the two ideas that I want to work, because I have to like a connection with the history of Susana. Obviously the history of Susana have a long part, obviously explain everything. My group read a group, and later do the reflection, and I show the songs, And they helped me to finish the second song because it's a word that I want to do with them. And that's everything that I do.
And I think one thing that's important, that's very interesting, I was talking to one of the members of your group later on Sunday, who's a friend of mine, Alex, who was talking about, we were talking about how this story of Susanna is mostly in, like, the Catholic version of the Bible.
Yeah.
And not in, like, the Protestant versions, which the Methodist Church is part of that kind of Protestant history, not so much the Catholic part. And why that is? And he was explaining to me how, like, when the Protestants were kind of forming their Bible, because I think it's also important to realize, like, how much influence, especially men, have over the book itself. Like, I know people often think, like, oh, no, it's a holy, it's a sacred text, so you can't, you know, argue with it or criticize it or anything like that. But I think it is important to recognize that they were basically trying to have everything be leading up to this idea of Jesus as the Messiah. And so, like, anything that didn't seem to really have to do with that end to the story, like, okay, we can cut this out. You know, we can, this isn't important. We don't need this. We can reorder some of these stories so that it makes sense, so that it kind of tells this narrative that we want of the coming of Jesus.
Yeah.
Which, okay, that's fine. The importance of having, like, a gender perspective, and especially women's perspective on these stories, is that you miss this story of Susanna, which is, I think, the first time or the only time in the Bible that you see a case of sexual violence being solved by the law, judiciously, by, you know, not just like, oh, you killed my, or you slept with my wife or hurt my wife, so I'll kill you. Like, but actually a judicial process of someone finding the truth, defending the woman and her story and believing her story, and clearing her name in the community and showing that the men were doing wrong by not only the sexual violence, but by, you know, lying and all that. And so you see that it's, okay, actually that's a really big deal.
Yeah,
it's a really important story talking about like sexual and reproductive rights, and justice in sexual violence cases and those things, that you miss out if you're not thinking about that lens of, like, women's experiences in life, and how that relates to religion as well.
Yeah.
He also said that he really enjoyed the discussion.
it's good.
We'll go to a quick song, that also kind of fits in with this theme. And then I'll be back to talk about what my group did, which was completely different.
Okay.
Solita a veces.
Marianne and I are here trying not to cry.
Yeah.
I was listening to, or I watched a video of Silvana Estrada explaining this song. And she talks about, you know, that frustration dealing with more and more news about femicides. Yeah. Mexico also has, I mean, I don't have the number in front of me, but also very high rate of femicides.
I guess in Latin America is the first country.
Yeah, I think Colombia is up there too, but I think Mexico might be the one of the top.
I guess that the last thing that I read about that, it's in Mexico die 7 women every day. Colombia is 3.
Okay.
Still 3 bad. Women every day. Obviously, it's too bad. But yeah, it's like trying to do the comparison about Mexico and Colombia. In Mexico, it's like 7 or 9. I don't remember exactly the number. And in Colombia, just 3 women every day die. But right now, I don't know, because every day
it's different.
A lot of notice.
And she mentions how in Mexico, there was like a hashtag that started going around that was called Si Me Matan, like if they kill me. As this kind of response to the way that the media often talks about these cases, of like starting to put the blame on, well, but why were you going out alone? Why were you going out late at night? You know, how were you dressed? You know, finding ways to blame women for men's behavior and for men's actions.
Yeah.
And so people started to post this hashtag of like, if they kill me, like, this is what I want. I won't let the press, you know, say something else. This is who I am. This is what I want to be remembered for. This is me, you know, not just another, like, figure. And so she kind of wrote this song as a response to that. As, you know, this is me and this is my life and this is how I want to be remembered. But also talking about, like, being soil for the next generation of this fight to continue. It kind of ends on this hopeful note as well of, you know, we won't be silenced. You know, there goes through a lot of emotion in this song, which I think is why I love it so much.
I guess I'm trying not to video like that, because right now I'm in my period, in my menstruation, so I'm more sensitive that every day.
Yeah.
And every day in my TikTok appear videos about dogs, cats, when the family renewed for later than 20 years. I'm crying. It's like, no, I can't. I love the song, and I guess the message that this song have is so powerful and trying to show the reality for us, for the woman. And I guess the fear that any woman we have in all moment that we be in the street. And the idea, it's like, we don't know what's going to happen to me or to my friend. So it's like a powerful song that talk about that. But yeah, trying to show that video is like, I'm not going to stop crying in a week, so I can.
It's okay.
Listen.
So back to our workshop on Saturday. My group, we looked at poetry. So similar to Mariana's group did music, my group did poetry. And we kind of focused on this idea of, in Spanish, sororidad, which is like solidarity among women, there is a word in English that, I mean, technically it would be translated to like either sisterhood or sorority. Culturally, that has a very different context because, like, in English, fraternity and sorority were kind of used as these, like, college clubs. Like, college campuses have, like, you know, the men's group or the women's group, and it's just a very different context. But in Spanish, I like sororidad, and it's has more of this fight for women's rights context. It's okay. Solidarity among women, especially in the fight for their empowerment and rights. But it's a word that I realized not everybody, even who speaks Spanish as the first language, necessarily know that word. It's not as used or not as common. So I kind of came across, I remember when I first came to Colombia and I started using the word, and people would try to correct me, like thinking that I meant something else. And I was like, no, I mean sororidad. That's what I want to say. And I kind of realized that not everybody knows what the word is. So my group kind of focused on understanding that. I have a poem. It is in Spanish. I think most of the people who listen to our program also speak Spanish or speak Spanish better than English. So I'm going to read it in Spanish anyway. But it's called Ama del Día, a poem by Ana Ilse Gómez Ortega from Nicaragua. Okay. You can, if you want to find an English translation, you can, although poetry is always better in the original language it was written in. And so we started our workshop with this poem. Ama del Día. Yo soy la suma de todos ustedes, mujeres encerradas en la Biblia, con sus sencillas o cruciales historias. La suma de todas las que andan sueltas por el mundo, haciéndolo más claro o más liviano. De ustedes vengo, de las fuertes, las vírgenes, las grávidas, las que pagaron caro, las esclavas. Vengo de la caracola convertida a través de los siglos en doncella, de la piedra estrujada que luego devino en cuerpo de alfarera. La voz de ustedes es mi voz, mujeres lejanas, mujeres de mi tiempo. Por ustedes canto y brillo como la más simple de todas las estrellas. Yo soy la suma de todas ustedes, hilanderas, amantes, agoreras. De la historia de ustedes nace el río inacabable de mi pelo. Por ustedes canto y oficio la liturgia estremecida del poema. Sabias mujeres que me sucederán luego, descabelladas, tercas, increíbles mujeres, amas absolutas de las cenizas y del fuego.
I love it.
I found this, I was looking for poems from Latin American female poets talking about sororidad. And so this is one that I found talking about, like, I am the sum of all of these women. So their fights, their, you know, struggles for human rights are mine as well. And we talked about the different, you know, kind of rights that we identify in the poem. I'm talking about the visibility of women in religion. You know, it starts off saying, like, I'm all these women that are shut into the Bible, even with crucial stories. It talks about sexual and reproductive rights. You can interpret migration as well. It talks about racism and slavery. It talks about history of feminism and kind of remembering the women who have come before me and the women who will come after me. There's a lot to break down in this poem, and so we talked a little bit about all that and about, like, this lack of solidarity we see in society as well, how women are constantly being like pitted against each other, that we're supposed to compete, that we're supposed to criticize, we're supposed to criticize other women, or fear empowered women. One person brought up the, like, history of, you know, having these empowered women be labeled as, like, witches or something bad, and we talked about how messed up is that. As a society, we were taught to fear witches and not the society that burned women alive or drowned them alive. You know, one of those things is much scarier than the other.
I don't know.
And so we talked about all that. We also focused on the story of Ruth and Naomi as a story of solidarity and sorority among women, and how these two women who were migrants, who were widows, who didn't have children, and so, obviously, women without a man to depend on, as like a son or a husband, were much more vulnerable. in their society, and they kind of defy all that patriarchy around them by staying together and being committed to each other. You can sometimes people interpret it as a queer story.
Yeah.
Because what Ruth says of, like, basically sounds like marriage vows. Like, anywhere you go, I'll go. Your people are my people. Where you die. I'll be buried till death do us part, basically. So some people interpret it as a queer story. I kind of like that interpretation.
Okay.
Other people just, you know, they were great friends.
Okay.
I think also for a lot of history, people labeled women as, oh, they're great friends, and they were single, and they lived their whole lives together, and it's like, okay, great friends, or,
yeah.
or something else. And we talked about that story, and then we did an activity, again, with poetry. I, like, cut out letters and spread them out on the floor. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough time to, like,
yeah.
do the full activity as I was planning, so we kind of rushed this part. To form words that were themes that they identified both in the story and in the poem,
yeah.
and just in the conversation in general. Fortunately, someone in the group did get to sororidad very quickly, and so that helped move the activity along a little bit, and then made an acrostic. So that's a poem yeah. where the first letter of each line spells out a word.
Yeah.
To make it shorter, we did sororas instead of sororidad, because that's kind of a long word. So they came up with a poem where each phrase started with the letters of sororas, and I did the first one. I was like, okay, so for example, S, solidarity among women, and
yeah.
then they kind of took it from there.
Okay.
And I think it went pretty well. I mean, obviously, there's always, like, there never seems to be enough time in these workshops.
No, never.
Especially when you have to wait a long time for people to show up.
And
then
I guess
that kinda
sometimes,
eats into.
Yeah, it's the conversation that do you have with your group.
Yeah.
You don't realize in any moment that it's, like, so long and you need to prepare the activity, so you start running.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But I think it went well. Unfortunately, Michelle's not here to tell us about her group, but they
yeah,
talked about
true.
Esther. And then Alejandra's group talked about Mary Magdalene. All very interesting. I heard great, you know, feedback from people who really enjoyed the workshop, and very thankful for Sepulch to be able to share that.
Yeah, and I guess it was so good because not just listen about the story that every group have it, just trying to have, like, compromise about what you're going to change, the story that
mm-hmm.
do you listen, and what you're going to trying to change that in your reality.
Right.
So I guess that trying to open more the vision about the woman, not just in the Bible, just in the reality and
mm-hmm.
the society.
Yeah. Yeah. The main takeaway of, like, how does this affect your life, and how does this
yeah.
make you more committed to the fight for women's rights in your context?
Yeah, that's true.
We'll go to another song by Sid Banestra, and then maybe be back for a quick update on a previous topic that we've talked about here on Mirrored Voices.
Okay.
Te he perdido tantas veces que inevitable es el recuerdo y la angustia del reencuentro de tu piel contra mi piel. Me ha costado tanto y tanto que ya mi alma se marchita y se deshacen lagrimitas que se olvidaron de rezar. Y si yo hubiera sabido que para ti era tan poco, hubiera sido más prudente al entregarte el corazón. Y si yo hubiera sabido que para ti todo era un juego, aquel verano entre tus besos no
yo no olvido ni un segundo el dulce tacto de tus manos.
Marchita by Silvana Estrada, which we talked about a little bit earlier. I don't know if you remember or if you listened to Mirrored Voices June, I have my notes in front of me, June 12th.
Okay.
We talked about child labor.
Yeah.
And I talked about how all of these, at least in the U.S., but I think in a lot of places, the child labor laws that exist.
Yeah.
Exempt the entertainment industry.
Okay.
So, like, if for child actors, singers, movie stars, you know,
yeah.
they're not included in those protections,
yeah,
which
true.
Makes them vulnerable. In the U.S., it depends very broadly on what state you live in. Some states do have protections and regulations
okay.
to protect kids. Other states don't have any laws that exist. And then I also talked at the end of that program about how even the states that do have protections for child actors or singers or children in the entertainment industry, the laws are not evolving with our technology. So now that
okay.
we see more of these, like, family vlog style, like, content creators
yeah.
And social media is not really part of any of those existing legislature. It's,
okay.
it's another thing, and how that can also be dangerous because
yeah.
we see in the past couple of years a really big growth in that kind of content
yeah.
of people talking about their families and their kids and, you know, that content creators making money off of their family on social media. And this week I found out that Illinois, a state in the U.S., has become the first U.S. state to pass laws or legislation specifically about this, about child influencers on social media being protected at least a little bit in terms of what's owed to them,
okay.
The profits off of those videos. So Illinois is the first state to enact this law for child influencers, which they basically consider any child whose online presence generates profit.
Okay.
So not necessarily like, oh, you post a photo of your kid on your Instagram or whatever, like, fine.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, like, you have sponsorships and you're making money off of content, you know, YouTube and TikTok and Instagram for people can become their full-time job. Which wasn't something when social media started. It was just kind of like to share, you know, some pictures and things with your friends and family. Now it turns into like a full career for some people.
A business.
A business, exactly.
Yeah.
So if there is profit being generated from those posts, then they start to consider that as being like a child influencer. So starting July 1st, a percentage of the earnings made from content featuring children under 16 goes to a trust fund in their name that they can access once they turn 18.
Oh, my God.
So basically, it breaks down to like 50% of earnings for content based on the amount of time that they're featured in the video, for example. So if like 100% of the video is on this kid, they have a legal right to 50% of those earnings. So not just their parents, but an account that goes specifically to them when they turn 18. It's designed for family or child blog influencers in which the child appears in more than 30% of the channel's content in a year.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of, like, enforcement in this law yet. And the lawmakers even said, like, yeah, this is imperfect, but it's important to start moving in this direction.
Okay.
So there's not a lot of, like, consequences necessarily or people, like, checking in to make sure that families are following this. But it does give people over 18 the legal action. They can take legal action. They can sue their parents who have, if they were featured in monetized social media videos and not properly compensated.
Yeah, but, oh, my God. It's, so
it's complicated.
Yeah, it's so difficult because you don't never know the child what's going to do with the money.
True. I mean, they don't have access to it until they're a legal adult.
Yeah.
And if they reach 18 and they don't have access to that, then they have the right to sue their parents.
Yeah.
Like, look, by Illinois state law, part of this money should be mine.
Yeah.
For education or for, you know, whatever the 18-year-old wants. And this is important because kid influencer accounts are set up and managed by parents, and they can earn $20,000 or more.
Okay.
You know, oh, there's a lot of money involved.
Yeah.
And there was really no way of trying to make sure that that money actually goes to the children who are appearing in those videos. Reading up on this law, there were also more interviews on people who were part of some of those videos, like children who are now older and now are kind of reflecting on that experience and talking about how, you know, like if they had understood then what they understand now about privacy, about being online, about, you know, all those things, like, no, I wouldn't have consented to this. But you're a kid, so you don't know what's going on. You just know that, like, mom or dad has a phone up to you, but, like, you don't have any concept of what...
You don't understand.
You don't understand at all. And children who are now older talking about how being in that kind of environment really changed the dynamic or the relationship they had with their parents. Of, like, yeah, I'm your dad, but I'm also your boss. Or this, like, pressure to continue doing content, even if you didn't want to. Because that was the family's main source of income.
Yeah, I guess... something like that about Britney Spears. I don't know if you know all the story that she was trying to start appear in TV and later she don't want to, but she have to because the family need money and all the thing that happened with the dad. And not was just the dad, was the person that take every decision about her life. So I guess it's difficult to understand, but also I guess... like, it's not good, but it's important the kids have, like, a moment to recognize, like, all the things that they do. Obviously, maybe they don't want to do that, but the parent put the video and have the phone and put that. And it's sad because in all that case, it's the parent that take the money and do everything. And the kid, that it's the famous person that is doing the job, it's that they not take any money that they want.
And a lot of these interviews are also talking about the difference that people don't realize with, like, social media and children versus, like, child actors.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of issues with child actors and their protections, but they're playing a role, and then they get to go home there's like kind of a separation a little bit more of like a personal life, whereas for like the family vloggers, you know, that doesn't exist. Like the camera is in your home and filming you in everyday life, and so there's no privacy or no like separation for children.
You don't have a normal life.
Exactly. You don't have a normal childhood.
Yeah, you don't have the opportunity to have friends or go to a school, because a lot of these famous child need to study in home because they need time to work or they need time to create content.
Exactly.
So I guess it's so difficult, like, that opportunity that maybe the parents do for that kid, but don't realize what suffer maybe the kid is going to have for her mental health.
Yeah,
because for a lot of people that be in that media, that it's old people suffer a lot of the mental health, because the people in the social media, it's so bad and like do so ugly comments about the person, about everything. So if a child does not have like support of the parents and not go to therapies or something like that, read that, and later in the life when they old, they're going to have problems about the body, about the life, and they not have like a normal way to have a life.
Yeah. And the last thing I want to mention before we run out of time is that this law was originally proposed by Shriya Nalimotu, 16 years old, who did a high school project on the lack of protection legally for child influencers.
Okay.
One of her teachers kind of encouraged her to reach out to state legislators who surprisingly listened and took a lot of her ideas that she was talking about and the points in order to make this law that passed and to be the first state to pass this kind of law.
Okay.
There are laws being proposed and kind of in the works in California and Washington as well. Hopefully this is something we can start to see grow more and more. More states, more countries, keeping in mind this protection for children online. And hopefully more parents kind of think twice about, you know, publishing everything or turning, you know, your kid's childhood into profit. I think there are definitely some questions to be raised about that.
I guess about this topic is like a big discussion about that.
So I wanted to give, since I read that this week and I remembered that we had talked about exactly this kind of stuff and the lack of protection last month here on Mirrored Voices. So I wanted to bring that, you know, little update that there are things happening and changes being made soon.
Yeah.
And that's all we have.
Everything
for today.
That we have for today. Yeah.
We're out of time, unfortunately, but happy to share with you some of the work that goes on here in Sepulch outside of this radio station, and an update on some things that we've talked about before.
Yeah. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you, Mariana. We hope Michelle is doing great on her trip.
Yeah. And thank you, Diego.
And thank you, Diego, for listening. Anyone else who might be listening?
Yeah.
Have a great rest of your week.
Enjoy the Colombia
and the Colombia game today.
Today, yeah. I'm nervous. I'm scared.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Thank you. Le tengan todos los aviones y los barcos que se queden donde estén. Por esta vez que el viento sople en favor de donde te pueda ver. Y si ya nadie va a salvarse, si hay que rendirse mucho antes a perder. Y si ya y hay que rendirse mucho antes a perder. Entonces sí, entonces me quedo y a la mañana sabrás qué decir. Y entonces sí, y entonces te quiero. Mil
Thank you.